This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. The bad news, good news picture regarding American media is, yes, we've sinned, but boy do we have company. Japan traveled this road before us, and we'll hear about that from Adam Gamble. Imagine this scenario. You live in a democracy, a media-driven democracy, riding on the power of the consolidated ownership of most news media outlets. Only 6 megacorporations control all infotainment from coast to coast. They fall in line behind the government, building support for war. The Big 6 are quite literally in bed with the ruling political party. Question or veer from the party line, and you lose access or get smeared as unpatriotic or worse. The only other course for media as commerce is the ever-popular tabloid. Hey, calves with more than one head always sell. Journalism now only survives in the minds of university professors. If you're imagining that I'm speaking about the good old U.S. of A., thanks for playing along, but I was actually describing what happened in Japan in the run-up to World War II. What has recently happened to Dan Rather and staffers at CBS, Jason Blair and others asleep at the wheel at the New York Times, and the faithful at Sinclair Broadcasting seems modeled on the dilution of the news media in Japan, beginning in the 1930s. Kenichi Asano, a former reporter and media professor at Doshisha University in Kyoto, has said, "After studying the situation in America, my new phrase has become the Japanization of U.S. media." American reporter Adam Gamble studied the transformation of Japanese media, interviewing 150 sources, and joined with professor of media ethics Takasato Watanabe to write A Public Betrayed. Kathy talks with author Adam Gamble.
We're speaking today with Adam Gamble, who's one of the co-authors of A Public Betrayed, an inside look at Japanese media atrocities and their warnings to the West. Adam, I think the reason why this book is so important right now to Americans is the state of American broadcast and print media being so manipulated by corporate interests. There's a history behind Japanese media. Can you give us a little thumbnail sketch of how that worked?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to. As a journalist myself, I just wanted to share that when I first started working as a journalist, I was a cub reporter for a local independent paper, and I didn't come in all starry-eyed like I was going to change the world kind of thing, but I did, have certain hopes. And I have to say that although my paper was independent and I have a lot of respect for it and the people there, the situation was that I found myself covering one official event after another and really having the news led by press releases, people contacting us with agendas, and found myself going from one official to another as opposed to really knowing what's going on there by digging in deeper, for the most part. And occasionally, a whole press release would get printed almost verbatim. This wasn't my fault or my editor's fault or even the newspaper's owner's fault. It was just the result of a lot of socioeconomic and legal issues. So A Public Betrayed is sort of based in that background. So my co-author and I really hope that readers of it come away as we did, armed against what you're talking about, the shift in American media, if you ever had that feeling where the U.S. news media just isn't doing the job that it should be doing for us in a democratic nation.
I have a great empathy for what you just said. I'm very lucky to be where I am. I don't make the money that I would if I did not work for a nonprofit, but I'm not told what to say. And I look in the eyes every night of broadcasters and wonder where their conscience is, either not reporting stories or reporting with a slant. Liberal media doesn't exist anymore, and most of the American public don't realize that it started to die out a decade ago.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Give us a little bit of that comparison between Japan and what you see here now.
Sure. It starts a while ago, but it's very relevant just the same. Leading up into World War II, by the time we get into, the late 30s in Japan, the country is very aggressive, militaristic nation, committing terrible war crimes worldwide, very racist society, really strict hierarchy, essentially a militocracy or dictatorship, however you want to exactly describe, autocracy might be a good term for it. And part of the way they got their lockstep uniformity of their people to follow this really perverted agenda was through a combination of intentional and natural policies. You know, in the teens and then in the 20s in Japan, there actually was a democracy, and a number of scholars compare it favorably with Western democracies of the teens and 20s. But by the time we get into the 30s, they implemented an intentional policy of putting out of business newspapers, magazines, any publications that they could that weren't following the line of the leadership, so that they put out over 3,000 organizations. And these were all private organizations on the whole spectrum, on the left and on the right, I wanted to say, but basically anyone that wasn't following the way they wanted it to. This was very wise and sort of sneaky way of doing it. In Germany, what they did was they came out with a Nazi press, and everybody knew. So if you were a so-called good German at the time, you knew this was the Nazi agenda. They knew where it was coming from. In Japan, if you were reading the Asahi newspaper in the 20s, you were still probably reading that top national newspaper. But what you didn't realize is that slowly but surely everybody else got put out of business. And now through having very tight relationships with just six companies dominating the Japanese news media and very intertwined relationships between these companies and the militocracy, they were able to manipulate the news, manipulate the people in a way that most Japanese did not realize was going on. And six companies dominated the Japanese news media by this time, and they still do, actually. In the United States, just five multinational companies currently dominate the entire U.S. news media and media. There are other sources, such as your own, of course, but there's just five that really control the vast bulk of what the United States is reading. It's a different situation, but it's a reality that I think gives one pause when you see it in that context.
Very helpful in making the case for what took place in Japan and has already pretty much taken place here is some of the case studies you get into. Talk a little bit about the sarin gas situation.
Sure. Well, that's a really interesting case study when it comes back home. And let me just reemphasize for those people that aren't familiar with Japan, it has a huge news media. It's giant in size, very sophisticated. The top two daily papers in Japan are the top two in the world. The number one newspaper in Japan is read by as many people in the United States. About 10 million read the top 10 U.S. newspapers combined. So they're huge companies, very similar to ours. They also have a democratic constitution that enshrines free speech. So again, very much like ours. But I think that the case studies is where a public betrayal is rooted. So imagine yourself at home on a summer's evening in a fairly rural town, and you're watching TV. Something goes wrong with your dogs. You go to check them. Something's wrong with them. You come back into the living room to the TV, and your spouse is ill on the floor. Next thing you know, you're feeling weird. This is what happened to Yoshiyuki Kono in Japan. Somehow he managed to crawl his way to a phone. He was having all sorts of hallucinations going on, and he called, you know, the first responders. So, you know, if you can imagine yourself, somehow he was the first person to call in his town. What was happening was a terrorist attack. This was a terror group that were trying to attack some judges that happened to have been staying in his neighborhood by a weird coincidence. So it could happen to any regular person. He was just a salesperson, nobody special. Seven people died in his neighborhood, scores of people seriously injured, and he goes to the hospital. Unfortunately, his wife is still in a coma now about 8 years later. She's never come out of it, probably never will. And he turns on the TV. He finally starts coming out of his hallucinations, hellish suffering, and he sees himself on the news. His name being dragged through the mud. He hadn't been contacted by the police yet, but he's identified worldwide and certainly throughout his nation as the likely perpetrator. And for a year, his entire reputation, everything he's worked for, his family, certain media, a magazine over there, tried to find information about his grandparents to say that he was a weirdo, very regular guy. He said to me in the interview that he blamed more than the police. You know, he understood why they would suspect them and stuff, because that's their job. And even the terrorists who eventually apologized to all the nation for what they did. But he blamed the news media even worse than either the terrorists or the police that victimized them. You get done reading this and you say, the Japanese people, it's terrible. They've been betrayed so bad. How bizarre. Well, the hauntingly similar situation happens in the United States. Richard Jewell, the security guard in the 1996 Olympics. Sure. Does that name ring a bell? Yeah. Here's a guy doing his job, private security company, fairly low pay. And he sees a backpack, calls the police, suspicious-looking package, you know, at the Olympics in Centennial Park in Atlanta. They find out it's a bomb. But similar, I believe, to the 9/11 responders who risked their lives on that fateful day in our country, when our country was under attack by terrorists, Richard Jewell stayed very close by that bomb, moved people away, and has been credited by some for moving perhaps 300 extra people away because he didn't run, he didn't scurry away, even though the bomb squad obviously indicated to him that it was a live bomb. Yet he's misidentified by false sources as a suspect. Media frenzy around him. His name is dragged through the mud here in the United States for months. And a very similar situation. It's been very relevant when we look at the prospect for terrorism here and worldwide now.
Well, now you wouldn't get smeared so much as be sent to Guantanamo, I suppose.
I hope not. I mean, that could be the situation. I mean, we focus on the media culpability. Here's two people whose lives are put in terrible situations by terrorist attacks, and then they're put through untold additional suffering because a bunch of people want to sell a bunch of papers. And instead of questioning the police, who didn't have a clue who were doing either of those attacks, instead of really looking at the global causes of the terrorism and our vulnerability, focused in on these innocent men to sell the newspapers.
Adam, in either case, how much was deliberate on the part of the press and how much was error?
Oh, nobody's ever asked me that question in those particular, so thank you. One of the things that I learned in studying it is that it's, for the most part, not a conspiracy going on against democracy in either country. It's really social and economic forces. So someone in those police forces decided we will leak the name off the record. And the press decided to run with that information without second-guessing the police and their sources. And instead of taking the side of average, everyday people to fight for democracy, their focus is, how can I be a top person who gets the scoop quickest and who gets the most sensational piece of information out there? You know, the heck with public service and pro bottom line.
You know, hopefully the pendulum will swing to the point where the American press finds its conscience, reports the truth one way or the other in a nonpartisan way and allows people to look at the truth.
Absolutely.
I wish you great success with this book, Adam. It's unfortunately a cautionary tale to all of us. The book is A Public Betrayed, an inside look at Japanese media atrocities and their warnings to the West. Again, Adam Gamble.
Thanks very much, Adam.
Yep.
Can you handle the truth?
Just give it to me straight.
Sugarcoat it for me.
If it's bad news, I don't want to know.
Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just choose the contact button. Or you can call us at 1-877-MARYKNOLL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's it for this week, and thanks for listening. Mark Lloyd and Adam Gamble are just two of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Kathy Golden, and I'm your host, Eileen Bott. You heard music today by
Three Dog Night and Big Star.
To suggest a topic or for more information on today's guests, just go to our website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. To get Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, please call us at 1-877-MARYKNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on our website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.